Welcome to another episode of PH Dibinem, Beyond the Lab. Today, we'll explore the fascinating world of imaging, modeling, and molecular approaches in orthopedics. Let's begin. My name is Marco Manzetti. I am an orthopedic specialist at the Rizzoli Orthopedic Institute, working under the guidance of Professor Cesare Faldini. Today, we are excited to share with you three different research projects developed within the doctoral program in biomedical and neuromotor sciences at the University of Bologna. Each of us will present their own project, explain the motivations behind it, and then we will engage each other with a specific question to better explore the topic discussed. Today, I'm with Dr. Alberto Arcieri and Dr. Marco Di Ponte. Let's start with my research project. But first, I would like to extend my gratitude to Professor Cesare Faldini and to the Department of Biomedical and Neuromotor Sciences of the University of Bologna, and to Professor Follo for the opportunity to present my PhD research project here today. The topic of my research is lumbar spinal stenosis, a degenerative condition that represents one of the leading causes of low back pain and disability in the elderly population. With an aging society and ever-increasing access to diagnostic imaging, the detection of lumbar spinal stenosis has risen sharply, making it the most frequent pathology requiring spine surgery in patients over 65. Lumbar spinal stenosis occurs when there is a reduction in the space available for the spinal cord and nerve roots in the lumbar spine, often due to the degenerative changes such as disc degeneration, hypertrophy of ligamentum flavum, and facet joint arthrosis. Clinically, it may manifest with symptoms ranging from low back pain to radicular leg pain, neurogenic claudication, and even sensory or motor deficits. At present, MRI is the gold standard for diagnosing this condition. However, the current classification systems, like those proposed by Skizas, Lee, and Miskin, mainly focus on the central canal and often neglect the involvement of the lateral recesses and neural foramina, which are crucial in understanding the full clinical picture. Moreover, these systems typically lack a strong correlation with patients' clinical symptoms, limiting their usefulness in everyday practice. Starting from this consideration, the core hypothesis of my project is that a novel comprehensive MRI-based classification covering central stenosis, lateral recess stenosis, and neural foraminal stenosis, and correlating these findings with a structured clinical grading and patient-reported outcome measures, such as the Oswestry Disability Index, the Numeric Rating Scale, and the Roland Morris Disability Questionnaire, could significantly improve diagnosis, stratification, and treatment planning. The project is structured in five phases, including a reiterative review, a retrospective analysis, the design and conduct of a prospective study, patient recruitment and evaluation, and final data analysis, with follow-up at 3, 6, and 12 months. Our ultimate goal is to validate a classification system that could serve as a more effective bridge between radiological findings and clinical management, reducing variability in reporting and helping clinicians to make better therapeutic decisions. Thank you very much for your attention.
Hello, Marco. Hello, everyone. My name is Alberto Arcieri, and I'm an orthopedic specialist at the Rizzoli Orthopedic Institute too. First of all, I would like to congratulate my colleague for the interesting presentation. I have a question for you, Marco. Since lumbar spinal canal narrowing can also occur physiologically with aging, how do you plan to differentiate pathological lumbar spinal stenosis from normal aging process in your study? Thank you very much for the answer, Marco.
Thank you for the excellent and very pertinent question. Indeed, distinguishing pathological stenosis from normal degenerative change is a major challenge. In our project, we address this by integrating imaging with clinical data. We correlate MRI findings with clinical symptoms and validated prompts, aiming to define meaningful thresholds beyond which anatomical narrowing becomes clinically significant. In this way, we hope to move from a purely anatomical to a functional definition of lumbar spinal stenosis, leading to more precise patient care. Now let's move on to the next presentation. It's my pleasure to introduce Dr. Alberto Arcieri. His research is looking at the potential role of sinus tarsi mechanoreceptors in the correction of flat foot deformity.
Thank you for the kind introduction. I'm very pleased to be here with my estimated colleagues. I'm Alberto Arcieri, an orthopedic specialist at the Rizzoli Orthopedic Institute, where I work with Professor Faldini and Professor Mazzotti. I would like to thank the Department of Biomedical Neurological Science at the University of Bologna, in particular, the Professor Follo, for the opportunity to work on my PhD research project. This aims to investigate the potential role of sinus tarsi mechanoreceptor in correcting flat foot deformity. Flat foot is a common deformity affecting up to 44% of children. It's characterized by a valgus alignment of the hind foot, talar adduction and plantar flexion, resulting in a reduced of the medial plantar arch. The subtalar joint, placed between the talus and the calcaneus, is a fulcrum of this deformity because the joint is constantly hyperreverted. The surgical treatment often involves subtalar arthrosis, where an implant is placed in the sinus tarsi to prevent extreme inversion on the subtalar joint. While the mechanical effect of the implant is well understood, some authors suggest that the implant could also influence proprioception by interacting with mechanoreceptor in the sinus tarsi. This could contribute to correction. This concept is known as informative RISI. To date, we have collected about 10 adipose tissue samples during surgery and sent to laboratory where the samples will be analyzed immunohistochemically to detect number and type of mechanoreceptor. We will then correlate mechanoreceptor density with radiological correction outcomes. This research could help us understand why some patients respond better than others to surgery and could guide alternative less invasive treatment.
Hello Alberto, Marco and everyone. My name is Marco Di Ponte and I am an orthopedic specialist at the Rizzoli Orthopedic Institute too. First of all, I would like to congratulate my colleagues for their inspiring presentations. My question is, the concept of informative RISI is central to your hypothesis. Do you believe there's sufficient evidence supporting the existence of an active neuroproprioceptive circuit in the sinus tarsi? Thank you.
Thank you, Marco, for the insightful question. The concept is currently theoretical. Some anatomical studies have confirmed the presence of mechanoreceptor in the sinus tarsi, supporting the idea of a proprioceptive function. However, detailed studies are lacking. My project aims to bring more concrete evidence on this topic.
Thank you to Dr. Arcieri for this very interesting presentation. Now we move on the final presentation. I leave the floor to Dr. Marco Di Ponte. We will talk about osteochondral lesions of the talus and innovative biomechanical treatment strategies.
Good morning again. My name is Marco Di Ponte, and I would like to thank my mentors, Professor Zaffanini and Dr. Mosca, the Department of Biomedical and Neuromotor Sciences of the University of Bologna and Professor Follo, for the opportunity to work on my PhD research project. Today, I would like to highlight how sometimes in medicine, when traditional solutions are not enough, it is necessary to think outside the box. My project focuses on osteochondral lesion of the talus, where both cartilage and subchondral bone are damaged, often following an ankle sprain. Healing is not always satisfactory, despite several surgical techniques. However, there are cases where these injuries do not result from trauma, but from local ischemia, genetic factors, or more complex biomechanical alterations, such as lower limb malalignments. And this is precisely where our research project came in. We asked ourselves, could modifying how the body's weight loads the ankle joint help healing? What if the problem is not just the injury itself, but the alignment with which the body's weight is loading on the ankle joint? Think about it. If the load is always concentrated on a damaged area of the joint, isn't it harder for the body to repair that area? And if we change that axis of load, could we perhaps help the injury heal better? To do this, we will use weight-bearing computed tomography, which allows us to visualize the foot as it supports body weight under real-world conditions. We associate these images with a particular study of the gait cycle using sensors that is called gait analysis and other tools like distance maps, which allows us to measure distances between joint surfaces on the CT scans. The goal is to understand how calcaneal osteotomies affect the tibiotarsal joint and how they change the distribution of loads on the ankle. In summary, we are trying to shift the focus from repairing an injury to correcting an alignment, because sometimes to heal a joint, it's not enough to fix the cartilage. You also have to change the way the body uses it. Thank you for listening.
Very interesting topic, Marco. I have a question. The concept that shifting the axis of loading could benefit osteochondral lesion is very smart. Is there already evidence supporting this theory?
Thank you for the excellent question. Some studies support this hypothesis, but most were conducted on cadaver specimens under static conditions. Our study aims to validate these concepts dynamically using technologies such as weight-bearing CT and gait analysis, bringing more clinical relevance to the hypothesis.
And with that, we conclude today's episode. Thank you. Stay tuned for more episodes of PhD Binem Beyond the Lab. Until next time.